This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
All right, welcome back to the show. Others receiving votes. Pat Forty, along with my usual sidekicks, Gene Wojciechowski and Brian Fisher. And you know, gentlemen, we made it through the Salute to Veterans Bowl. We endured a truly dreadful Cure Bowl. Had a dramatic 68 Ventures Bowl. But we better be talking about the playoff. We've been talking about it all year, and it's finally here. We're going to play some playoff games this weekend.
Playoffs?
Those playoffs. Thank you, Jim Mora. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Brian, I think, is going to 2 games. I'm going to 1. Before we get into that, we're going to also, I'll give you the rundown of what else we're going to cover. We're going to check in on the mess at Michigan, which exploded not long after we wrapped taping on the podcast last week. We will discuss the state of things in college football, as expressed by Eli Drinkwitz, the Missouri coach, who has some interesting thoughts. I will respond to the worst take in recorded history from Joel Klatt, who I like, but not on this subject. And I will ask you guys the most annoying possible question at this time of year. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay. We're going to start, like I said, with the playoff. We're going to look at the 4 first-round games. I want to start with this question for Eugene. A lot of pressure this time of year.
Eugene, I get it. That's funny.
Yeah. No ducks necessarily related here. But okay. Maybe. We'll see what you have to say. Which team is under the most pressure in the playoffs?
It almost seems like a trick question. Alabama to me, and there's not a second place. Half the world, maybe more, doesn't think they belong in the playoff because they still have the stink of that loss in the SEC championship to them. Their head coach is still answering questions about the latest opening in the Big Ten. And I'm still not sure he's convinced anybody that he wouldn't leave. Notre Dame sticking voodoo pins in the Bama doll. I think that they're the team that everybody thinks really doesn't belong in this field. And if they lose this game, and they're favored, by the way, even though they lost to Oklahoma at Bama earlier in the season, which is just another little pressure point for them, they're going to hear about it. And you know how well, fellas, they take losses in the state of Alabama when the Tide loses. I mean, they'll
hang
black crepe paper on every freeway except in the greater Auburn area. So I don't even see a number 2 in this, but maybe you guys have a better idea than Bama.
I do have a better idea, but go ahead, Brian.
I'm going to go with Ole Miss. You know, I think the Rebels have a ton of pressure on them, just given everything that has happened over the last, 6 weeks, you know, and just in terms of the Lane Kiffin drama. I mean, there is a ton of pressure on Pete Golding in particular, but I think the Rebels themselves, you know, as a team, I mean, this is one of the biggest moments in school history that they are facing on Saturday. Home playoff game. It's against a Group of 5 team that they've already played. They've already blown out earlier in the season. Like that to me is not only a rematch with a lot of pressure, But there's both internal stuff and external stuff that has been going on. There's been a lot of talk about this program, about what it's going to be moving forward. I think there is a close second to Alabama there, Gene, in terms of Ole Miss. You know, that to me sticks out just in terms of, look, everybody's been talking about this team and this program. How are they going to handle that pressure? What if things get tight there in the second half against the Green Wave? Like, that is that's just going to ramp things up even more. And you know what? We've seen teams get tight in certain playoff situations. We'll see what the Rebels have to say for themselves on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brian. I think Ole Miss has the most pressure in this tournament, certainly in the first round, given the stakes, given what went down, given the administrative decision to say, no, Lane Kiffin, we don't want you to coach this game. Go ahead and go to Baton Rouge. Pete Golden, get in here. You take over. And you are playing a team you've already beaten by 35 points. And you're playing at home. And this is going to be a big old media sideshow, I can tell you that. They've already put out something via the Sports Information Department. Hey, yeah, you have a credential, but if you're not coming, let us know, because we're overflowing the press box and we're turning down people and we're putting them on wait list. So everybody is watching what Pete Golding's going to do in his first game as a head coach. He's one of those a little bit prematurely gray guys. I bet he's going to be more gray by kickoff than he is on Thursday. You have to win this game, I think. And I think they should. But still, as you said, Brian, if this gets tight in the second half, oh my, oh my, oh my. Alabama, yeah, absolutely. There's pressure on them too. I agree. And I would also throw in that Oregon has some pressure to perform after the faceplant of last year as the number one seed. Yeah. Ohio State was a great team, but they got totally trucked in their first and only playoff game as an undefeated number one seed. So,
well, what about Miami? I would throw Miami out there too. Like, we can't forget about the Canes. I mean, just in terms of, yes, they are carrying the banner of the ACC too. I throw that out there. So plus the controversial nature of them getting in. Gene mentioned the push pins going into the voodoo dolls. I mean, I think Notre Dame fans are definitely putting that into to the Miami doll as well this weekend. And, you know, that's going to be a pressure-packed environment down there in College Station. You know, there's going to be 100,000-plus swaying Aggie fans that are going to be trying to force Carson Beck to have some turnovers. Plus, Miami spent quite a pretty penny on this roster in general. Not only their quarterback, but the entire roster in general. So I think a lot of those Hurricanes fans that did pony up for some of that money, they would be looking for a little return on their investment in this first round as well. So there's going to be a lot of pressure, especially if things are tight in the second half. We all know Mario Cristobal and how he can get sometimes in some of these close games. The Canes are not without pressure in this first round either.
True. And look, there's a lot of voodoo pins to go around for Notre Dame fans right now. They're using all of them. They've made a big push on them. I don't know where you go to buy voodoo pins. You know, if there's Voodoo Warehouse out there, you can order them online. But
New Orleans?
New Orleans, yeah, yeah. They're getting Notre Dame will be sitting there waiting to see teams fall, that's for sure. All right, slightly different question, Brian. Which league is under the most pressure?
I think it's the SEC. You know, the Big Ten is kind of playing with house money after back-to-back national titles. They've got the three elite teams in this kind of bracket that are capable of winning it all. But the SEC, they have more teams than anybody. But, you know, can they not only end the Big Ten dominance that we've seen in the playoff the last 2 years, but, you know, you've got a lot of shots. You've got teams that are capable of going on runs. I don't think the bracket necessarily, sets up that well, because you're going to possibly have two SEC teams meeting in the Sugar Bowl in that quarterfinal. So I think the SEC is under a ton of pressure. We've heard Greg Sankey talk about how there should have been seven teams from the league getting into the playoff. You know, I think that kind of sets the bar pretty high. And look, the bar is pretty high in the league, where it just means more in general. You know what? They expect to kind of win national titles. That's the thing that they have set kind of as the standard over the last two decades. And the fact if they were to come up short, if they were, you know, potentially not even to have only one team in the semifinals, that to me puts a lot of pressure on the SEC and a lot of pressure on those head coaches too. And I think they understand that. They understand where the level is that they need to get to. And it's especially true because when you look at the Big Ten in general, kind of their team that they want to compare themselves to, that's the league that they say, hey, we're a power two. It's the SEC versus the Big Ten. They've not shied away from that at all. And look, you look at next year. Oregon has a lot coming back. Obviously, Ohio State has a lot coming back. You know, this USC has been building. So the league in the Big Ten is getting deeper. And so I think that's going to make this Big Ten versus SEC comparison even more apt come playoff time. And this might be the one year where the SEC needs to knock off the Big Ten, or else maybe the Big Ten goes on an even more extended run than just three straight national titles.
Well, I'm with you. I think the SEC has the most pressure. They're going to lose at least one team out of the five, and they could lose two this first round if Miami beats Texas A&M. So losing 40% of your SEC field isn't a good look for that conference. But let me ask you, what's the number one ranked team in the playoff?
Indiana.
What's the number two ranked team in the playoff?
Ohio State.
Okay. And then where's Oregon ranked?
Five.
Okay, so three of the top five teams in the rankings are Big Ten teams. So if they underperform, while I'm still sticking with the SEC, you can make a case for the Big Ten having a little pressure on them too, given their places in the rankings.
Yeah, no, look, I'm not going to argue with either of you guys, but for diversity's sake, I will throw out the ACC, which – I'd better see Miami show up, because a lot of people thought Miami shouldn't have been there to begin with, given the extent to which Miami went to lobby for the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
And went to bat for them and infuriated semi-member Notre Dame. The Hurricanes need to back up their positioning, especially, you know, the whole thing of how Miami or the ACC has been perceived mostly by its own doing throughout this season. You know, lightweight conference, did not perform well in the non-conference play, ended up screwing up their tiebreaker situation, which put Miami out of the championship game, which was then won by Duke, which then jeopardized right. them getting anybody in. And then just, you know, for funsies, they added this bizarre 2026 scheduling thing where 12 teams are going to play 9 games and 5 are going to play 8, and the math isn't mathing very well. So this would be a good time for Miami to show up in College Station, get a win for the ACC, so people give that conference a little bit of respect here. So, all right. Now, this was a topic last year, and I can fully anticipate it being a topic this year, because there's one thing a lot of people in the college football establishment don't like, and that's the presence of anybody other than the most powerful programs, i.e., group of five teams in here, Tulane and James Madison. Last year, the opening round margin of defeat was 19 points, which, hey, NFL, it was 15. So the NFL first round of the playoffs was full of non-competitive games as well. But how much blowback is there going to be if there are blowouts? And I think there's going to be plenty. And that goes to the point Joel Klatt made, which was about a different sport. We'll get to that later here in the show. But it's really weird how people just don't even like the idea of a Cinderella in football the way they do in basketball and other sports. Like, for some reason, there is this resistance to it. I think there's just such an ingrained hierarchy of who is good or should be good versus who is not. And I think so much of that goes to laundry and tradition. You look, the Athletic had a poll of coaches, like 25 coaches or something, about who was going to win the playoff here. And like Indiana got 4%. Who watches Indiana and thinks they really don't have any chance to win the championship? I don't. Maybe you guys do. But like that goes back to my brain can't compute Indiana is good. And so people's brains, well, Tulane can't be good. James Madison can't be good because they haven't been good. Now, Tulane does have to overcome the fact that they lost the team they're playing by 35 points. So it would really behoove people like me who want to see other conferences get into this for Tulane to not get trucked and for James Madison to not get trucked, because I think there will be people sitting out there waiting to say, see, it'd be better if we had Notre Dame in there. It'd be better if we had Texas in there. We want the brand names. We don't want diversity in here. So I think that there will be blowback for sure if those games are not competitive.
But Pat, the other two brands that could have a complaint if those two G6 teams are blown out would be non-brand names. And I would throw BYU in there. Maybe they're semi-brand.
Yeah.
And Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a question of people saying JMU isn't a really good team or Tulane isn't a really good team. I think the question is, are they one of the 12 best teams in the country? And I think that's where the debate is. I'm with you. I have no problem with having a G6 team in there. But from a competitive standpoint, if there are blowouts, and last year we only had, what, one G6 team, Boise? This year we have two. So if both of those teams get blown out, yeah, there's going to be more noise about it. And let me tell you, the Notre Dame fans are going to be insufferable if both of those teams get blown out. So I think that's where this all stems from. But from the idea of, is there anything wrong with having a team that isn't necessarily one of the legacy programs? No, I'm fine with it.
Well, and the bigger issue, too, is that nobody's going to watch those blowouts because they're going to flip over to the NFL games, and then they're going to have some big big hot take over the inclusion of these G6 games, even though they probably did not end up watching half of the actual contest and actually yep. seeing those teams in action. So that's going to be the more frustrating thing if there are some of these blowouts. And, you know, I think we always want to take these bigger picture concepts from such a limited sample size, right? It's one team versus the other. So one of their head coaches both their head coaches are now leaving. You got members of the staff that are leaving. We know players are going to enter the transfer portal as soon as these games are over. So like these two G6 teams are actually, quite a bit in flux. And so if they do end up getting blown out, it's at least a little bit understandable, but we're going to have some big takeaways from a lot of personality that out there right before Christmas about, we shouldn't include these games. And it's already started. That drumbeat has already started. And, I just don't get it. You know what? These teams deserve to be in. They've done everything that was asked of them. They were ranked as high as they should have been by the committee. They followed directions, right? And I just, even if they get blown out, we shouldn't be willing to tear down the system just because we got two more blowouts in the first round. This is just what happens in college football sometimes. You know what? There's just a bit of a talent mismatch.
But by the way, remember the 8-9 seed game last year?
Yeah.
Who played in that?
It was Tennessee and Ohio State.
Yeah. Huge legacy brands. Yeah. And it was a blowout game. So yes. It happens. It just happens.
That game was on track to be 100-0 at one point. I mean, it was an absolute massacre. So, yes, good teams can get blown out too, or big name teams can also be blown out.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
All right, boys, let's get to the games themselves. Friday night, we got Alabama at Oklahoma. Palace on the Prairie. Brian, I believe you will be there, correct?
I will.
There we go. All right. As you're looking at this, what is the key to victory in the game?
Well, I'm much more excited about the prospect of Norman not being like 20 degrees like it was in South Bend last year. But it will be windy, so I think that is going to impact the quarterbacks, which I think is the big one. You know, I think you go back to that first meeting, which I was also at, that the turnovers from Ty Simpson, that was a big thing. I think obviously you've seen when John Mateer is not turning the ball over, Oklahoma has a shot. So that's going to be key. You know, which quarterback can actually hang on to the ball against two defenses that love to tee off against them. I think this is kind of a first to 24 points kind of wins type of game. You know, I think if you've seen Oklahoma historically this season, that's kind of been a key number for them. Only Tennessee was able to hit that and still end up losing the game. Which they had to hit late. So I think that's going to be key. Can you get to 24 points? That's four scores. And then really, you know, what running game is going to be at least present to present some sort of a threat? You know, neither of these teams run the ball all that well. I think, if, you know, Jam Miller's back for Alabama. We'll see if that provides any kind of a boost for them on the ground. I think if you at least have a threat of a run game to where it's not just those defensive ends up for both sides just teeing off and rushing the passer, I think that will be key for at least some semblance of some sustainable offense in this game.
If you looked at the stats, and Brian, you were there, after that game, I bet you when you looked at that stat book and you saw the Bama dominated just about every category, you would have thought Bama won that game by 20 points. And instead, speaking to your 24 point number, the final score was 23-21. You mentioned the running game. So I really think this game hinges on which offensive line plays the best. Oklahoma's offensive line has been, you know, mediocre to average, to slightly above average at time. Bama's running game, as you mentioned, hasn't been very good either. So If Bama's offensive line, they had problems with communication the last time they played OU. If they can clean that up, that's a huge deal. If they can get the running game going a little bit, that's a huge deal. And if they can protect Ty Simpson. So the key to me is how does Bama's offensive line in particular respond this time on the road?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm not sure anybody's getting to 24, Ryan, as you noted. I think might be first team to 17 wins this game because there are just not going to be many scores. You guys pointed out most of the key facets there. The other things I would bring up, Oklahoma's special teams are outstanding.
Yes.
They have a great kicker, a great punter. They blocked a key kick in that game against Alabama the first time. So in a tight game, small margins, that could be a factor as well. And then, you know, not to state the obvious, but which quarterback can make some big plays? This is going to be, you hit a couple of big plays, that might be enough here. John Mateer has had times when he's looked great. Ty Simpson's had times when he has looked great. And then they both have really struggled as well. So who can conjure up a little bit of magic? Who can play with poise while you're getting rushed? Because both teams will rush and put a lot of pressure on them. So those are my things there, special teams and quarterback. There. Saturday, Miami, Texas A&M. You're going to be at that one too, right, Brian?
I'm attempting to, along with a few other few other media members. We'll see if we can make it. It's going to be a little tight turnaround from a night game in Norman to that 11 a.m. kickoff in College Station. But I think this is obviously the game of the first round. You know, the most intriguing game for sure. And, you know, Gene, to your point, like which offensive line is really going to come through here? Because you're going to need it against some of the pass rushers involved in this game. This is the one I think all the scouts are going to. There's going to be a lot of pressure on both quarterbacks, who can take care of the ball. I think we saw some progress in the second half of the season from Carson Beck bouncing back from those turnover-filled games that Miami didn't end up losing in October. I think the Aggies, though, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on them in this game. Home game. You know, just the way they ended that last outing against Texas, you know, they're going to be motivated for coming into this one. And frankly, they haven't played all that well the last, say, month of the season. You know, they scraped by, had that incredible comeback against South Carolina, which, you know what, that first half counts as well in terms of their overall play this season. So I think this is going to be a fascinating matchup, and it is going to come down to which offensive line can at least slow down the opposing pass rush, because I don't think either of these quarterbacks, when their clock gets sped up and they're forced to kind of make those quick decisions, sometimes it can get a little antsy. It can lead to some big plays, no doubt about it. But if that's a more consistent thing, that tends to be when turnovers happen, and that's ultimately going to hamper whoever ends up does committing those.
Well, Gino, I want you to know it's already been a big fall in College Station. Their volleyball team is in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Upset undefeated Nebraska to get there. They're playing Thursday night. We're taping this Thursday morning.
Okay.
But perhaps even bigger, A&M did once again win the National Meat Judging Contest. Always a big thing in the state of Texas. They like their meat down there. They judge their meat extremely well. So kudos to the Aggies on that. Can the football team live up to the meat judging team, Gene?
What did I do when I saw this rundown? I immediately called you, right? I thought this was a joke.
Oh no.
National championship meat judging?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what's next? National championship in parallel parking. Let's do that. But I actually looked it up. They assess and judge carcasses of lamb, pork, and beef.
Yeah.
And they also look at cuts of all these meats too. I need to take them to the next Chicago steakhouse I go to. I know this game has a little bit of a bigger spread than the OU Bama game, but it feels like a pick'em game here also. I think it's 3.5, and I think that's just a product of the game being played in Aggie land. But everything that Brian said, I'm with, and I think this is one of the really cool games of the week. I mean, of the playoffs to me, because yes, Bama OU slugfest. We don't really know what we're going to get offensively, but I think we have a pretty decent idea. We'll see actual offense, we think, in this game. And so which quarterback can actually, you know, produce this time? They're both great quarterbacks. Which one can produce against those defenses?
Yeah. When you go to that Chicago steakhouse, you say, and I hope you have a Texas A&M meat judging graduate on your staff.
That's here. What I need.
Yeah.
I want
an
A&M
meat judger taking care of my steak.
What does yes. NIL look like for meat judging? That's my question.
I'm sure it's got to be lucrative, man. A lot of money in steak. A lot. Probably in lamb chops, too. What interests me in that game, I want to see, I think, two of the great playmaking wide receivers, Casey Concepcion for Texas A&M and Malachi Toney for Miami. Which one of those guys can maybe get loose, make a couple of big plays here? Concepcion, yeah. Also a dangerous punt returner. Which team may use them in the running game, you know, jet sweeps, reverses, that sort of thing. So that game, I'm super fired up for that one. If you're Texas A&M, you have been waiting for the chance to be big time for a long time. And yeah. Here's your opportunity. All right, Tulane Ole Miss, I am attending this game. Potentially,
Brian isn't going to that game also?
He's slacking. He's only okay. Going to two in less than 24 hours.
I got two. Right. I got two games the next two rounds, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, no, that like the Grove is going to be just completely insane. The weather's going to be great, unlike the frozen tundra that basically enveloped almost all of the playoff in the first round last year. It's supposed to be 64 and sunny in Oxford on Saturday. So I am fired up for this and to see how fired up Ole Miss is. But Tulane should be as well. My question, I guess, which coaching staff has done the best job keeping their team kind of on the task at hand while dealing with all of the tumult around them? Because we know John Summerall obviously is going to Florida, and trying to handle two jobs at the same time is really difficult, especially when they're both head coaching jobs, we've seen some guys, you know, wear two hats before, like at Kirby Smart. But one, he's the defensive coordinator at Alabama, and he's the head coach at Georgia. That's not the same as being the head coach at both places. So a little added degree of difficulty, I think, for Sumrall and for Tulane there. The good news is his replacement was already on staff, Will Hall. They're just promoting him. So that kind of keeps the continuity going, kind of like Pete Golding with Ole Miss there. People at Tulane seem pretty confident that their team's going to show up in a better way than they did the last time. We'll see about that. But Jake Retzlaff is one of those quarterbacks. He can be a wild card. He can make some bad plays, but then he can make some big plays too. Generally speaking, the more that's on the line, the better he does. So I am fired up to be there for that one. You guys, any thoughts on that game?
Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I'm very curious to see what the Green Wave has stored up, because I think of that first meeting. Obviously, Jake Retzlaff had just gotten there, you know, late in the summer. You know, he was still kind of easing into things when, you know, playing in a big SEC environment there in the first one. They won't be scared, I think, going into this environment. They've been there before. They understand what they're facing, even though things might be amped up just a little bit more than they were in that first meeting, given how long the fans are going to be tailgating for this one there at the Grove. They will be well lubricated for that one as well. So I think Tulane understands the assignment in this one. And I think it's going to come down to essentially can they finish off drives? That was a problem in the first one, that they could not finish off drives when they got past the 40. That was kind of led to the lopsided score in the first one, and then turnovers. I mean, that's going to be key really in all these first round games. But man, is it in this environment with this team, you cannot be giving Ole Miss extra possessions. That's just a doomsday scenario for the Green Wave. And if they do that, I don't think they have necessarily a shot to pull the full upset, but I think they can keep this thing close enough. And then if it is the second half, things are a little bit close. That's when the opposing team can get tight. And I think of all the G6 teams out there, Tulane, with what they have offensive and defensive lines, they're going to be able to be a little bit more competitive than I think people are thinking, especially after seeing that first score involving these two teams.
So I read one of the stories that said it's a $74 million economic impact to Oxford with this game. So I know you guys mentioned this earlier, the pressure on Ole Miss, and I would argue that I think they're going to be more free. I think they're going to be the reception that they get when they run out onto that field is going to be thunderous. Pete Golding is going to have hearing loss. They are going to cheer that guy and that team like they've never done before. Anything that's not Lane Kiffin, they are going to cheer. And the fact that Charlie Weiss Jr. is back as the play caller for this game, the fact that they've had some time now to sort of process some of this. Look, there's no getting around it. It's a bizarre game for all sorts of reasons, including the Tulane side too, with the coaching change. So I think unless Tulane is able to handle the early parts of that game when Ole Miss is going to be absolutely sky high, I think this could be another 35-point loss for them. But I would argue that Ole Miss is going to play with a freedom that maybe they haven't had recently, and they don't have to deal with the Lane Kiffin thing. They're just going to be there playing hard, playing together, playing for their new guy, playing for the old guy, Charlie Weiss Jr., and they're playing at home in front of a crowd that is going to give them one of the great bear hugs.
That's a good point. I mean, they will. The crowd will love them to pieces to start with. If it keeps going well, they'll continue to. We'll see. If things don't go right, that might change. Well, they'll just start hating Lane Kiffin more in absentia.
Exactly. There you go. When in doubt, Blame Lane.
That's right.
Will we see some effigies of Lane out on the Grove beforehand? Pat, that might be your initial assignment.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I think there will be some scene at this game. The last game of the four, James Madison at Oregon. This to me is more about what Oregon needs to show. It would be important for James Madison to show up and be competitive. I think they can be. I think defensively they're pretty good. Offensively, we'll see about the line, and we'll see if Alonzo Barnett, the quarterback, he goes up and down. He can have some great games, and then he can struggle. So Oregon, to me, they need to take care of business, and this should be like jump on them, get after them quickly. Oregon's defense is underrated. It's very good. You know, the program DNA has always kind of been flash on offense, but this defense is excellent. Dan Lanning is a defensive guy. They are one of the best pass defenses in the country. 13 interceptions on the season, and they had the best pass efficiency defense rating in the Big Ten. So they get a couple picks early, and they start getting things rolling. And then I think Oregon can start to think ahead a little bit towards what should be a great quarterfinal game with Texas Tech. Y'all, any thoughts there?
Impose your will. Be physical. Get out of the game without any serious injury. And take some momentum into that Texas Tech game. It's pretty simple. I don't think JMU is going to be a huge factor in this. But if that was my checklist, that would be it if I'm Dan Lanning.
Well, I'm looking to see how healthy are Oregon's wide receivers. You know, they might only be down. You know, a lot of their big-time players are listed as questionable on the availability report. They may only have three healthy guys at wide receiver. And we all know, hamstring, something, you know, happens. You know, you get knocked out of a play. I'm going to be very curious to see how the offense, especially with Will Stein going off to Kentucky, maybe a little bit distracted, how they're going to handle that in game. I don't anticipate, you know, James Madison making this a close game in the fourth quarter, but you know to your health, you know, is Dante Moore on the same page with some of those guys that maybe he hasn't been throwing to quite as often throughout the season? So, and can they get any of those guys healthy back? You know, I think that's a big going to be a big question, not only over this game but over the next round. Can they at least get, you know, Gary Bryant Jr. a few reps in there and get him a few passes thrown his way so he's comfortable with game speed going into that Texas Tech game? Should they advance? I think that's going to be key. And then, you know, like you said, Gino, I mean, being healthy, especially on the offensive line, I think that's going to be key for Oregon, because we know what's awaiting them in that next game.
All right, guys. Producer Kent insists on putting the standings of the winners and steak dinners race in the rundown. I don't know why.
How you doing?
You know, it's almost Christmas. Let's try to be charitable.
Okay.
Brian now 41-36. Gino picked up the win on Army. He really, really wanted us to point out that he did have Army in the Army Navy game. And so he's up to 38-40, which does include the bear pick. And I am in arrears. 2.5 games behind Gene.
Arrears.
Yes. That's become my default position.
Okay.
So let's pick these games. We can go quick through these. We don't have to belabor them because we just did belabor them. So let's just make some picks here. We'll start with the Friday night game. Alabama giving 1.5 in Norman. Brian, which way are you going?
I'm going to take the Tide minus 1.5 reluctantly, because I think this is very much, as the line indicates, a coin flip game. But I think, you know, just seeing that first game, I mean, that was like one of the lowest win expectancies of any game in the country this season for what Oklahoma did. They only had 212 yards of offense. They got some turnovers in timely manner. To do that again and repeat that against a very motivated Crimson Tide team, I think that's going to be a tall task. And we know how big or good Kalen DeBoer is in big games. So give me the Tide.
Three turnovers by Bama the last time. I don't think that happens again. And I saw a stat by ESPN that said Bama hasn't lost to the same opponent in the same season twice since 1893. So I'm going to go with history here, and with the idea that Bama can avoid those killer turnovers again.
Now you've got me looking up the 1893 football team. I'm doing it here. I've got to find out who beat the Tide twice. Oh my, they lost four. They were 0-4, and they were beaten twice by Birmingham Athletic Club.
That would have been my guess.
Yeah, of course. You know, powerhouse back then. October 13th, they lost 4-0.
Yeah.
And then in the big rematch, November 4th, they had a lot of tape to go through to get ready. They were closer. They only lost 10-8.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also lost to Sewanee and Auburn. That's a tough season for the Tide. I bet
See,
whoever you, was the coach.
Pat, well, I threw you Eli a
Abbott.
Softball.
I'm not sure Eli Abbott got another season after that.
I threw you a softball there. I thought for sure you would take it. I was waiting for the – well, what was it like to cover that game, Gino?
Oh, man. I missed
you had your chance.
There.
Yeah.
I'm taking Alabama in this one. You guys covered the reasons. I think Bama gets revenge here. So no Birmingham Athletic Club repeat in this one. All right, Miami getting 3.5 at Texas A&M. Gene, where are you going?
I'm going with the Aggies, and I just think in the power of the home field and Mike Elko and his sort of wizardry on third down defensive calls, Miami's going to be very tough, but I think A&M has a lot of their offense creates a lot of challenges and problems too. And I guess I just trust Elko a little more than I trust Mario Cristobal.
I also trust Mike Elko over Mario Cristobal, but I will take the Hurricanes getting the 3.5. And no obvious reason why. I mean, I think these are two really evenly matched teams. You know, fascinating to see the battle in the trenches and these two quarterbacks going at it, like we mentioned. But I don't know if I could just necessarily, you know, truly trust Texas A&M in general, especially after seeing them up close in person in that Texas game and the way they just kind of got overwhelmed by the moment, I think, in the second half. And maybe they come out motivated and they just kind of make the plays that they need to. But I will lean Miami, especially after the time off that they've had to prepare for this game. Maybe it makes a difference down there in Kyle Field.
Yeah, I'm going with the Hurricanes there as well. I think they're a more talented team. They're both good teams, but I think they're more talented. They had their rough spot in the middle of the season. I don't like the way the Aggies finished the year. I do like the way the Hurricanes finished the year. So I'm rolling with the Canes. All right, Tulane plus 17.5 at Mississippi. Pretty big number, but it's also only half of what the number was the first time. I'm going to take the Rebels here. If this does, as Brian pointed out, if this is a close game going into the second half, there will be a lot of dread and angst in the stadium. I think Trinidad Chambliss and the offense get going early and put up some points, and they win relatively comfortably here. So I'm going with the Rebels giving the 17.5.
I'm with you. Unless Retzloff has a game of his life, I think Ole Miss covers comfortably.
I think this could turn into quite the shootout, you know, between these two teams. Like I saw Ole Miss's defense up close in person in that Georgia game, and they allowed the Bulldogs to march up and down the field on them. I don't necessarily think Tulane has that kind of same offense, but I think they can put up enough points, and maybe it's through the back door, but I think they do end up covering the 17.5. I think this will be a pretty fun game, all things considered, given all the storylines and given the two teams themselves involved.
All right, and James Madison getting 21 at Oregon. Brian, what do you think?
Quack, quack. Give me the Ducks.
JMU's farthest road trip was 1,421 miles. Now they're going to double it. They're going to go to one of the toughest stadiums, Autzen, and they're going against a really physical team. I think JMU's defense will hang in there for a little while, and then I think the Ducks just wear them down. So I'll take Oregon also.
Fine, I'm rolling with the Dukes. Give me the 21. It was 21.5. I liked that better, but I'll take the 21. I think the Dukes will be able to hang in there, take some punches, and at least cover. And that could be a backdoor situation, especially if Oregon is ahead comfortably in the fourth quarter and trying to rest some guys for the next round. Maybe JMU gets a TD or two that makes it covering the spread there. Now we're going to add one other game.
Yes.
The Brawl of the Wild.
Yes.
FCS semifinals, Montana at Montana State.
Yes.
Gino, you've been to this game, right?
I've been there for that game. College game day, that went there one time. And because of the time change, we were out there on the set really early in the morning, and it was about 400 degrees below zero, as I recall. And I could not feel anything below my knees, but it is a really cool atmosphere, a really cool place, and it's one of the great, great games. They call it their Super Bowl, and now they're going to play it twice in the same year.
Yeah, Yeah, they played regular season, and Montana State won a close one. I went to Big Sky Media Day did a story on that and talked to the people. And this was the game everyone talked about when these two play each other. And now to get to play for the right to go to the national championship is awesome. So I am hopeful that turns out to be as good as everybody's expecting. Tickets are like $700 for this game. It's the highest priced playoff ticket, partly because the stadium's not very big and there was some complaining because they weren't bringing in added bleachers. So this is a big game, big scene, Big Sky country. Montana is getting four. Gene, what do you think?
I'm going to take Montana in the four. They will argue that a tip pass that went for a pick six and a missed field goal is what cost them. And yeah, it did. But I think it will still be a close game. Only 22,000 is what that Bobcat Stadium holds, by the way, Pat. And that's only if they unloosen their belt buckle. And standing room tickets are going for $450. So it's going to be an electric atmosphere. But I'll take Montana and I'll take the points.
I will do the same. And, the SCS playoffs, man, I just love watching them this time of year. We typically have some crazy finishes, some great, this game will be on ABC, for a lot of those teams that, if the actual college football playoff games are a bit of a blowout, this could be worth tuning in for on Saturday as well. And not only the atmosphere, but I just think that the run game for Montana ends up coming through in this one, and the revenge factor throwing this in there. And how cool will it be if Villanova wins? We get the Pope's team versus the Big Sky for the FCS title game in come January. So I'm excited for this one. Give me Montana in the four.
And Pat, Brian will be covering this game also.
I wish.
Hey, I might show up at the FCS championship game. It's in Nashville, not far from me.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. I'm going to counter program you guys and take Montana State. I have no insight other than the fact that I need to make up ground on you all.
Right.
But I will say this. FCS plays home games all the way through the semifinals, and we talked about the $74 million economic impact in Oxford. You don't think Athens would like $74 million or whatever it would be if they had a home game quarterfinal? Columbus, Ohio, Bloomington, Indiana, Lubbock, Texas. I would love to see quarterfinals on campuses too.
See, maybe you'll get your wish.
All right, guys, we got to talk about the Michigan situation. As I alluded to earlier, that blew up later last Thursday. Sharon Moore fired for inappropriate relationship with a staffer. Story got pretty dark thereafter when he was arrested, charged with felony home invasion, two misdemeanors, allegedly threatened to kill himself after breaking into the staffer's home with whom he had a relationship. Terrible situation for Moore's family. I feel very badly for them. It's a bad look for the university and the athletic department, which is now under its own external review to find out what they knew, when they knew it, how they reacted to it. And this is really the latest in a long line of problems in Michigan athletics, and particularly in football. They won the national championship in 2023, but there has been a lot of stuff going on there under Jim Harbaugh and now clearly under Sharon Moore. Gino, we'll see whether Ward Manuel even survives, the athletic director. How big is the stain on Michigan, and how do the Wolverines go about a search, and who should they hire? A lot there, sorry.
That's okay. So three questions. How big of a stain? This is like spilling spaghetti sauce and then grape juice on a white dress shirt. It's not coming out anytime soon. So it's a huge deal. And it makes the little Connor Stallion thing feel like, something that we could all laugh at. This is serious stuff. And it's really a question now, is this systemic within that program? So that's what that internal investigation, I hope, can address. How do you go about the search? Well, they don't have a permanent president right now, but if you're the interim president and you're Ward Manuel, and even though you're Ward Manuel and you might be hanging on for dear life for your job, I think you go to these candidates and you said, we're a bit of a dumpster fire right now, but we're also one of the great public universities in this country. and maybe the world. And we're the all-time winningest football program in major college football history. And we have resources out the wazoo. And we're going to come out of this stronger and better because we're going to acknowledge our failures and we're going to fix them. And now we need a guy to lead this program, and we want you. And we're going to give you every possible tool to succeed. So I think you have to be honest. I think you have to acknowledge your many sins. And then I think you have to have a plan to move forward. And then who should they hire? Well, if we're going to take Kalen DeBoer at his word and say he's not going anywhere from Alabama, which I'm still not sure is really the case, but if we're going to take him at his word, then I think you're left with Kenny Dillingham. This is in the college division of candidates. Kenny Dillingham from Arizona State, Jed Fish. You guys know how I feel about Jeff Monken and Army, but Michigan would never be that bold. And then I'm going to throw PJ Fleck from Minnesota in there. Those would be my three sort of finalists. I think Dillingham, who still hasn't really absolutely said he's not going anywhere, I think Dillingham would be the guy that I would target.
I have to give you credit. I did the interview no-no, asking multiple questions, and you actually answered all of them. What a pro.
Probably went on a little too long, but...
No, that's why we pay you the big dollars. Brian, what do you think? Who's Michigan getting?
Oh, that's a good question, because it does seem like the search is advancing a little bit, even though there's almost some cognitive dissonance given everything else going on above, you know, in the administration and with this review. I don't think anybody has a good time frame in terms of, you know, what that's going to take in terms of, hey, you might get hired by an AD that's going to get fired here in a couple of weeks. So, like, that's something that a lot of candidates are probably going to overlook, just because, you know what, proof of concept is there for Michigan. They have won a national title. There is a ton of money there in that program with the alums there. Like, you know, this is not going to be you're walking into a situation and you're going to have, you know, one arm tied behind you. Right? It really could be one of those type of power vacuums that some of these head coaches are going to look at and say, hey, you know what? I can be the big man on campus. I can kind of take things over, run my ship without as much interference as I would normally have. You know, moving forward. Now we'll see what, in terms of oversight of the program, what might end up changing, given all of the allegations around Sharon Moore. And that to me is, you know, stepping back, you know, the picture of him in that jail cell while he's being arraigned, that was, you know, shocking. You know, just that's going to be an image that is going to stay with a lot of people for a long time. And, you know, Michigan can no longer claim any kind of high ground anymore as a program. You know, I think we've talked about the Michigan men and all the mythology, you know, surrounding, you know, leading this program, but it has been an issue there in Ann Arbor for the last couple of years, just a drip, drip, drip of scandals. And, you know, ultimately that will catch up with you a little bit, and we'll see who ends up wanting to jump into this game. You know, Gino, you mentioned Jed Fish as a possible option, a former Michigan assistant. So he at least knows the lay of the land a little bit, but has done a good job there at Arizona and Washington, certainly building those two programs up. You know, he has not really gotten one of those kind of marquee jobs with a big time roster. So, you know, I would be kind of curious to see what he would be able to do with this. Kenny Dillingham would be a home run hire. You know, will he actually want to leave Arizona State, you know, especially after seeing, you know, his quarterback that he developed hit into the portal, seeing a lot of his talented offensive and defensive linemen leave. You know, I think that's going to be a big question hanging over this in terms of whoever they can get to take this job. But it's going to be very interesting, because this is the winningest program in college football. There's going to be a lot of attention on what Michigan does no matter what moving forward. So I think that's a lot riding on this decision in Ann Arbor. And, you know, if we thought the Penn State coaching search was going to get a lot of coaches some raises, Michigan might come in a close second. Given the number of names that we've been mentioned in this one, and worst case, you know, you can leverage this for some roster support moving forward for a lot of those coaches out there that might be maybe a little hesitant about the situation overall.
To me, this is like house shopping, and you've got a dilapidated house, but it has quote unquote good bones, right? It's Michigan. You can fix this one up, and it was not going to take forever to fix it up. So the money is going to be there. Larry Ellison's fourth wife will pay for an elite quarterback if Bryce Underwood should leave. You're going to be okay. I think they will not struggle to have candidates for this job, even with the late leadership chaos. And I would expect a change at athletic director as well. So if you're Michigan and you believe Jed Fish is the guy, then you go get Jed Fish, and I think he would do it. I think he wanted Florida, as a matter of fact. Otherwise, I would not be surprised if there's some NFL candidates that emerge and some other people there. I'm not concerned about Michigan's ability to get a good coach, even with the amount of chaos and reputational hit there.
But, Pat, let me ask you a question, though, to both of you. If they wanted Jed Fish, wouldn't they have already offered him the job? If they wanted Kenny Dillingham, wouldn't they have already offered him the job? If they wanted PJ Fleck, wouldn't they have already offered him the job? There's no impediment for them to make those offers right now. So, I mean, look, I went to a land grant institution, so maybe I'm not thinking this through, but it seems to me they're waiting on somebody else then, if they haven't already done this.
I mean, and it could be, look, like I'm with you. I'm not convinced the DeBoer thing's totally over, right? I thought that he very reluctantly was pushed into saying, yes, I will be the coach at Alabama next year. And coaches, when it came to the Alabama job, have said things and then done the other before Nick Saban. But I agree with one exception, Gene, that I think there's a possibility that Ward Manuel's hands are not literally tied, but tied enough right now that he can't offer a job.
Yeah, fair enough. You know? Fair enough.
Like who is doing the hiring? I think that that might just be the case, and I don't think they want to rush another coach in while this, you know, just mushroom cloud has been over the program as well. So we'll see. Hey, going to be a lot to watch this weekend and coming out of it, especially if Alabama loses, then Kalen DeBoer front and center. Just say, yes, I'm back. No, I'm not. One or the other.
Well, okay, I saw where Biff Poggi, the interim coach at a news conference recently, said they hope to have somebody hired by the end of the month whatever that's worth.
Yeah. They'll ruin our holidays with breaking news. It's not the first time. Sorry to think like a sports writer. All right. Another topic here, guys. Eli Drinkwitz, Missouri coach, had a lot to say at a press conference this week. Some thoughts just on the big picture state of the game. Producer Kent, can you play an audio clip from that, please?
TV viewership may be at an all-time high, and that's awesome. And gambling on sports may be at an all-time high, and that's great. I got no problem with that. But what about the well-being of the student-athlete? What about graduation rates? What about tax implications? What about handling and understanding financial literacy? What is their life going to look like after 5 years of college athletics? Is it going to be better because they participated in college athletics? Or could they be in a tougher situation? And, you know, that a lot of us got into college athletics because we wanted to help young men grow and develop. And I think we're still doing that mission, but it's getting really hard because you used to talk about, Coach Saban used to talk about all the time creating value for yourself. And when he talked about it, he wasn't just talking about value for the NFL. He was talking about creating value for yourself with a college degree. And we've lost that aspect of it. And these guys are going to create tremendous value for themselves playing the game of football, and that's awesome. And I love that these guys are getting paid. I love that last week these guys with their own money went out and bought gifts for Coyote Hill. I love that. That's awesome. But my job also is to look at them in 3 or 4 years down the road and how many of them are in a better position because they've played football if they've transferred 4 times.
All right, some interesting thoughts there. He also said he thinks the system is, quote, sick, and that there is no such thing as tampering because nobody's been punished. He said we've worked around the system instead of creating a system. Gino, you think Drink is speaking the truth, or is he just complaining because people are trying to raid his roster?
I don't know if I'd use the word sick, but I do think college football has a temperature. and just because the TV ratings are high and because the stadiums are full, we think everything's okay. I've seen that 1,000 times from folks saying, what problems? Have you seen the TV ratings? Have you seen the attendance? yeah, they're all really good, but that doesn't mean that below the surface, there aren't some problems that long-term really could kneecap this sport. And I'm totally with Drinkwitz on this idea of does a diploma even matter anymore? Is that even part of the factor? I'm not naive enough to think that 10 years ago, was it a factor also? But I do think he makes some good points. And there is tampering going on constantly. I don't think he's complaining. I think every coach is probably complaining about that. So I do think there are some illnesses, some warning signs, sick, maybe too strong of a word, but cause for concern, absolutely.
Well, that is what the money is for. You know, I mean, you know, and really the speed of change, I think, has really impacted everybody's thoughts on this. You know, ratings are at all time high. You know what? Players, you know, you mentioned the well-being of players. Well, now a lot of times they're coming out of school with enough money to either buy a house or already have bought a house and maybe even paid most of that off, probably having a degree or at least having the opportunity to go get a degree. So like the players themselves have never been better off. You know, they are actually working the system to their advantage and not the other way around, which was the case for decades upon decades. And the speed of change and not having really any kind of stable kind of waypoint to kind of guide them, that they've had, you know, years and years and years and years, these coaches were coming up in the game. You know, they knew when, all right, when February, all right, here's signing day. We knew you could count on a guy if you spend a number of hours recruiting him, that he would at least be there, you know, for 2 or 3 years. You know, that, you know, having to adjust to those new realities, you know, is I think really taken these coaches by surprise. But guess what? You know, dealing with all these headaches, dealing with re-recruiting your roster, dealing with all the things that are changing in the sport, that is what the money is for. And Eli Drinkwitz, guess what? He's getting a big new contract and you know, some raises, some additional resources there at the program, you know, as a result of all that and the result of the good that he's done. And I don't know if it's necessarily that the system is sick, but it is a new system. It's going through some growing pains and, you know, everything will come out the other side. And based on, you know, some of those ratings, some of the interest levels in the sport, this is the second most popular sport in the country right now. And you know what? That's a good position to be in, especially given that there is a lot more growth to come, you know, especially at the high end of college football moving forward.
Yeah, I see both sides of this, which, sorry, that's probably not good podcasting to not just have a strident stand on this. But I the one point Eli makes about, to me, the constant transferring is detrimental. That is not a good thing. That there is no way that helps your academic standing. And most of these guys do still need a college education and a degree. To Brian's point, absolutely. Many of them are coming out of college with more money than they've ever had. And that was, you know, the constant lament was, you know, we're taking kids who may be from a poorer background. We come in, all they get is a scholarship, and then they're back out and they don't have anything. Hey, there's guys now that, yeah, they can afford a house. They can afford a car. They, you know, they've got a standard of living possibility that didn't exist until the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. So I agree, that's a huge advantage. But I think the worst thing that's happened has been the court ruling that struck down any sort of penalty time for multiple transfers. And the ability to be immediately eligible and go from school to school to school to school every single year. That doesn't help. That does not. I fail to see any situations in which going to 4 schools in 4 years is beneficial for anybody. So that's where I'm with him. And I do still think there should be an educational component to this. It is still college football. So some good food for thought from Coach Drink, or liquid for thought, Coach Drink. Some bad food for thought from Joel Klatt.
Here we go.
Appearing with our friends from Next Round Live out of Birmingham this week, and came up with, and I like Joel. I covered Joel as a senior in college at Colorado. We both played for Gary Barnett. We both love Gary Barnett. So I have nothing against him, but I thought this was the most ludicrous thing I have ever heard. He took a flamethrower to the Cinderella concept, not just in football, but in basketball. He did acknowledge it was the hottest of all takes. He said the NCAA basketball tournament is a joke and it sucks for the fans. Kent, I think we have some sound on this as well.
The NCAA basketball tournament is a joke. It's the dumbest tournament and the least fair tournament in all of sports. We go and we put teams at odd times on neutral sites in a one game affair. Like, that doesn't crown a true champion. We're not doing anything that tells us who's the best team over the course of the entire season.
That's incredible.
Go Pat.
That's incredible. We take teams and we put them on a neutral site in a one game situation. Like maybe the Rose Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl and the Cotton Bowl and the Sugar Bowl that are part of the college football playoff, but it's bad in basketball. Also, this, it sucks for the fans. Really? Which fans? Because I didn't see a bunch of fans sitting there when Oakland was beating Kentucky saying, this is terrible. This is no fun at all. Oh, this is awful. Who wanted to see Fairleigh Dickinson beat Purdue? No, nobody enjoyed that. UMBC beating Virginia. Butler going to the Final Four. Like, this concept that the NCAA tournament is bad? I've not heard this before. Tell me if I'm wrong, guys. Tell me if the NCAA tournament is bad, because I kind of thought people liked it.
Well, you know, that's probably the one true thing that everybody can agree on in college sports is how much they love the NCAA tournament. They love filling out the brackets. They love the Cinderella, Joel. And I mean, he's actually already walking this back. I just saw he said it was a bad take. It was a terrible take just this morning. So like he understands the blowback. And I do like Joel worked with him, obviously, at Fox Sports previously. But like the one thing, if you're going to attack, maybe not make it something other than the thing that everybody seems to agree upon. Those couple of weeks in March, everybody is all in on the NCAA tournament. They love the fact that Kentucky can go down to Oakland. They love those upsets. Like that is the one thing that literally anybody other than that fan base that is suffering through those games on the losing end, everybody's all in on that. And you know what? That's the reason why CBS and Turner and all the other TV networks, that they want to see those Cinderella upsets in the first couple of rounds and then get to some of the bigger name brands, certainly as you advance. But everybody loves those. Everybody is on their phones now. They're tuning in. They're finding ways to watch those games as soon as there's a whiff of one of those upset alerts come tournament time. And that's a reason why everybody understands it. It's the best time of the year for a sports fan is that those March tournament runs by a lot of those Cinderella. So Joel's way off base. I think he's come around to understanding that moving forward. And maybe he'll limit the hot takes there for the NCAA tournament.
Can we get a wellness check on 40 and his blood pressure right now?
I could go on, but I won't.
Well, this would be my point to Joel, and I admire his work too. I think he does a great job as an analyst on those games for Fox. But when it comes to Cinderellas, Joel Klatt has had a front row seat at one of the great Cinderella stories in college football for the last 2 years. It's called Indiana. And I haven't heard him complain about that Cinderella at all. And now that Cinderella is ranked number one, and it's one of the great, great stories in the history of college football. So sometimes you say things, and as the words are leaving your mouth, you want to try to push them back in. And so it's good that Joel's recognizing that perhaps that wasn't the greatest take of all time. And we've all done it.
Oh, yeah.
But this was spectacularly wrong in its width and breadth. And so I hope he understands. I would encourage Joel to go to an actual NCAA tournament and tell me that watching some of those Cinderella teams scoring their upsets isn't fun to watch.
There we go. To your point, yes, the more you talk, the more chances you have to say something dumb. We've all done it. We've done it on this podcast, I believe. Maybe not me, but you guys have.
I don't think I have. Probably no. Brian, mostly.
Fair.
All right. Last thing, and then we got to get out of here. The most annoying sentence of the month, this time of year, every year. Have you finished your Christmas shopping yet? I hate it when people ask this question. You get at the grocery store, you're checking out, you see friends, you go out to a bar. You finished your Christmas shopping yet? There's judgment there, man. There is judgment. It's hidden, it's veiled, but they are you as bad as I am, or I'm better than you are and you haven't finished yours. There is judgment in the question. And personally, that is a deeply personal situation. You do your Christmas shopping on your own schedule. I like to think I'm like the closer in a baseball game. I don't get off my butt till the ninth inning, baby. Get me, I'll start warming up about now, and then you can put me in the game, and I'll throw smoke, and I'll get some presents. I may have to pay extra for, you know, shipping. Sometimes you're out of the sizes are out, and you get one that's too small and say, hey, you know what, we'll return it later. But I will not be moved. I will not be bullied into early shopping by, have you finished your Christmas shopping yet? But I ask you, men, have you done your Christmas shopping? Are you finished?
I still have some work to do.
Okay.
And I'm with you. I don't like that question either. I certainly don't like it by who's ever asking you. It sounds like the church lady is asking it of you. But yeah, it's unfair. We all have our own timetables. We still have a week to go, don't we?
Yeah.
So I'm just loosening the right arm. I mean, see? You know, just playing soft toss in the bullpen. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Mind your own business.
Right.
Well, I got about half a dozen kids' Christmas presents right off to my left here. So the shopping at least has been done. It's the wrapping part that I always have an issue with. That is the thing that I wait till the last minute for. Like if you want to have some complaints, Pat, I think that's the better question to ask. Have you done your wrapping? You know, like
yeah, well, and that's truly, you know what? To me, that's what the Hawaii Bowl is for.
Yeah.
Turn on the Hawaii Bowl at 8 o'clock on Christmas Eve. Give me an eggnog. I'll get around to doing some wrapping. I'm a terrible wrapper to begin with, but that is a last minute chore, no doubt about it. That's it for this show. We will have another one before Christmas. We're going to try to pump out early next week. But otherwise, you're free and clear for the weekend. Playoff games should be awesome. Watch them, enjoy them. We'll be back to talk about them. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.